Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
How you feeling about your Bears? How you feeling about your quarterback? Let's get to our buddy John. He's in Joliet. Hey, John.
Good morning, guys. V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. Victory, victory. That's not right.
Let's try Don. Don's on the west side. Hey, Don.
Yeah, I think that it was a great win because just simply because we won because of Caleb Williams and him not just being a part of the game. You know, we had to win that game handily.
Let's try Brendan. Brendan's on the road. Hey, Brendan.
We're managing expectations. We're not appointing anybody a Hall of Fame player. All the nonsense meathead we do.
Pardon? Oh, whoa. Got a little casual there.
That's all right. He's having fun and he just swore.
He thinks he's on max.
That's all.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
You guys are the greatest thing on sports radio.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Can you feel it? Can you feel it in the air? Do you feel that extra push? It's for hockey, baby. It's a hockey push.
Morning, Mullet. Yes, it's Tuesday, October 8th, and the NHL season starts tonight. The Blackhawks back in action in Utah, of all places.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Oh, how exciting.
We interrupt this Bears buzz to bring you hockey season.
The Utah Club Coyotes playing against the Blackhawks tonight. Come on.
As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Let's do that hockey. A lot of new Blackhawks to learn. A lot of new teams. Another new team, but a lot of new players on this team surrounding Connor Bedard. It's all about 98. But, yeah, it's a bit strange that they are opening in Salt Lake City, of all places. Against the Yeti. It should be the Yeti.
Yeah.
It should have been the Utah Yeti.
And yeah, I don't know.
Hockey club just doesn't quite get you excited.
Well, and then in that spirit, I say Coyotes.
Well,
like the Utah Jazz.
They moved from Phoenix, obviously, or Glendale. They didn't care. Didn't matter where they played out there. No, they were forgotten, overlooked.
They were the New Orleans Jazz, and they moved to Utah.
Well, yeah, the basketball. I'm talking about the hockey team. Yeah.
I was just being an idiot.
But it is hockey season.
It's hockey, baby.
Every sport is involved right now. Every sport
Bulls
in Chicago.
Open tonight. Bulls.
They do, in Cleveland. They're not going there for a vacation either. They're going there for preseason opener. We'll see a little bit of Lonzo Ball, maybe.
You like it?
We'll see a little bit of how deep the rotation will go. We'll see a lot of guys that might play little minor roles on this Bulls team. A lot going on. Baseball playoffs, all kinds of Chicago implications there. All kinds of ex-Chicago players at the forefront of the baseball playoffs. Carlos Rodon, the latest last night, didn't have it.
It was fun.
It was fun. And the Bears, probably by now, Bears are waking up in London or catching up on jet lag because they arrived overnight. I think as we slept, they probably landed.
What time did they leave?
I think they left around 6 or 7.
So it's about a 7-hour flight.
Yeah. So they are probably, they crossed the pond overnight. While you slept, they flew.
They crossed the pond.
Yes, they did.
It's 11:30 there. They're probably just, you know. They tried to stay up. Maybe they got some eggs and now they're all exhausted.
Well, I think that what they're doing makes more sense to me than what the Jaguars are doing.
Yeah, that's weird. Where did they leave in Thursday night?
Jags are leaving Thursday night, according to the latest report. They also are considering changing their travel plans because of the weather. The horrible weather situation in the Southeast, and you wonder if they will do that. They do have experience, more experience going to London than the Bears do, but it just strikes me as a little bit unusual to wait until that late in the week to readjust your body clocks and then get ready for Sunday's game.
Helene hit, right? And this is a new hurricane that is going to be worse, right? The model looks worse. We'll find out. The problem with Elaine, it kind of hung over the area for a while. This one looks like a massive storm.
Devastating. It really does. It looks like it is devastating. Hopefully, it just looked already the wreckage and the damage has been terrible.
Yeah.
And you just fear that it's going to get worse this week. So the Jaguars will do what they do, but the Bears have an advantage, I think, in getting out there, getting acclimated. I like the way that Flusie is approaching this. And they're off today, and then they get back to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Business trip.
Off day in London. Pretty good.
Not bad.
Good town to be off in.
I think they'll probably give them a lot of opportunities to do some things with their family. If their family made the trip, they had ample time to plan. So we talked to DJ Moore yesterday. Sounds like he's not bringing his family. This is a business trip. So,
yeah, good. It's good. The game is winnable, and that's good. And you got to keep stacking wins, my friend. That is the name of the game. It is also pretty interesting, I think, to kind of look at the Jags and where they're at in their season and think about the Bears with another opportunity to take advantage of a less than stellar passing defense.
Well, they got to beat the Jaguars. Jaguars aren't much better than the Panthers, really. They have a better quarterback, certainly more proven in Trevor Lawrence. You wonder what where he has in his stage of his career. But you are a Bears team trying to convince people that you are a playoff caliber football team. You won a game at home. You took care of business the way you should have. But now you've got to go into the bye with some credibility. If you don't, you lose it. If you lose this game, you lose a lot of the momentum and credibility you've built up to this point. Can't let that happen.
Yeah, you stack some wins. It's perfect kind of getaway day, last game before their break. Nice to have a little break. And we saw the Chiefs do it the way you're supposed to do it. They won a game, and now they're on the bye week. So congratulations to Kansas City last night. It was good to see Taylor Swift back in the building.
It was good to see Tay-Tay.
Yeah.
Yes. I wondered at one point if they were going to interview her on Monday Night Football. Because didn't Troy Aikman say something at one point about wanting to do that? And then they showed a shot that she was directly below their booth.
Yeah.
I thought maybe at halftime they would go down, escort her up, and then they would have a nice little halftime interview.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily good for her or her career.
Why not?
I just don't know what she knows about football. I don't know what that would be like, and I would, I don't need to know. I think she's doing great. I just don't know that I need to hear her try to answer a football question.
Yeah, I don't know how heavy duty football questions they would get into, but I think it'd be fun.
If he wanted to have fun with it
and
really went after her with some really interesting football conversation.
Well, she was there, and apparently Travis Kelce decided to show up as well because he was active in the Chiefs offense.
Yeah, he led them in receiving, but still is yet to score a touchdown this year. Pretty extraordinary, 5 games in.
It's pretty crazy that, as somebody pointed out in the X, that Jared Goff has more touchdown receptions than Travis Kelce.
It's pretty funny. But I'm glad those two crazy kids are still together and have it going. And she was there, and someone said she had she wore some sparkle.
Just a sparkle on her cheeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little sparkle on her cheeks.
That's nice. She freckled up for the Chiefs.
Mahomes has 331 yards passing, but no touchdowns. And Kareem Hunt back, 27 carries, 102 yards. Favorite play was Travis Kelce catching a pass and then laterally.
Oh, the lateral.
The lateral play was fun.
Yeah.
Planned or unplanned.
I think they hit 2nd and 34, and then they got about 10, 12 yards. So they're in like 2nd and 22, and they run that play, and it gets them to a 4th and 1, and they convert the 4th and 1. That was pretty spectacular. You see a team get to 2nd and 34, and you do not believe that they're going to wind up with a first down, but that's pretty special.
They sometimes seem like they're toying with the defense, and they're only trying to amuse themselves.
And they
do that very well,
and
they seem to be able to do whatever they want to the point where they can get inside the red zone and have Travis Kelce take the snap and run a read option and hand off to Xavier Worthy, and they score a touchdown on it.
Yeah.
That's getting too cute. That is reinforcing the idea. Every offensive coordinator out there who gets too cute is watching that saying, oh, we can do that. Let's do that next time we're inside the five. And it's the Chiefs. Yes. They can do whatever they want.
Matt Nagy could do that in Kansas City, not in Chicago.
Exactly. So that works well when you're dealing with Travis Kelce handing off to Xavier Worthy, the fastest man in the league.
On the planet, isn't he?
I think, I don't know if it's the planet.
It feels like it.
It does.
He was so fast. They ran a little screen pass at one point. Did you see that? And Patrick had to put the ball, like put some air under it. He catches it, Xavier Worthy, and he just accelerates past the safety, I think it was. It was just whoop, all of a sudden he's, you know, in a first down territory.
It's amazing. There are rules and conventional wisdom for football that apply to the rest of the league, and then there are rules and conventional wisdom that apply only to the Chiefs.
I was watching the Manning cast, as I'm wont to do, and they had Bill on during that play. It was just interesting.
I did not catch the Manning cast much last night. I prefer these days a lot more of Troy and Joe.
Yeah, I like the Manning cast because it was not on last week, and then I had missed one earlier in the year because of my cable company's issues. So it was just fun.
I'm glad you got that cleared up.
Thank you, buddy. I really enjoy the Manning cast. I like watching those guys watch football with someone who knows football.
The best play of the night, though, that wasn't necessarily involving a Chiefs touchdown or offensive wizardry, was the interception by Kalen Saunders, the big guy.
Right.
326 pounds, the defensive tackle from Western Illinois.
Crazy.
A leatherneck, huh? In the NFL. Picked it off. Ran it back. That was very amusing.
You love to watch big guys run.
Yeah.
I know.
Shades of Keith Traylor here in Chicago.
That was one of the greatest ever. That was absolutely hilarious.
I find it hilarious that they can do everything with analytics now. His max speed of 15.79 miles per hour, the third fastest by a ball carrier weighing over 320 pounds since 2016. Who measures these things?
Yeah, that's crazy.
And did you see the other sidelight? All of a sudden, he's an instant celebrity, viral on social media. His brother is a dancer for Taylor Swift.
Oh, how richly ironic that she was there for that. You mentioned Keith Traylor. A fact of Keith Traylor's life is that he came into the NFL as a linebacker. And then I believe, was it 80 or 100 pounds he put on over the course of a couple years, and then he wound up as a defensive tackle. Can you believe that a guy could put on that kind of weight?
He ate his way into a position switch.
Yeah.
And a pretty good NFL career.
Yes.
Yeah, he lasted for a while. Yeah, I think that every defensive tackle has visions of having a moment like Kalen Saunders did. That was quite a return.
That was a thick pick.
Nicely played. By the way, I was driving home from TV last night and listening to the broadcast here on The Score.
Yeah.
With Kevin Harlan and Ross Tucker.
Yes.
They don't typically work together, I don't believe, but Ross Tucker is outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, obviously so Kevin Harlan is the standard. But being able to work with him and not the fact that he doesn't do it all the time, we're lucky when we get to talk to Ross Tucker. He's outstanding, and they blended in so well together. They did such a nice job. Ross Tucker is a joy to listen to in terms of just a guy who knows football and has a great presence and sense of humor.
And he loves football. Like, that comes across, too, on the broadcast. He just loves the game, and he has tons of insight, and he works very hard. He's excellent. I agree with you.
And Kevin Harlan's as good as it comes. In terms of the play-by-play. So
I totally agree.
That was a treat last night. Then watched the rest of it. I'm glad I got home in time to watch the interception because that man, big man, was rumbling and stumbling and taking it out. I thought the Saints might have a shot at one point in time. But no. Chiefs are just toying with them. That's what they do. I'm not sure.
And we mentioned the baseball. We have the games tonight. And just as a public service, you've got you got the Mets and the Phillies, right? They're tied a game apiece, always fun. That game is starting at 3 o'clock in Chicago, 4 o'clock in Chicago. It is on FS1. And then the Padres-Dodgers will be on after that. That'll be closer to 8 o'clock at night. They're on FS1. So there's no need to get a scavenger hunt going, it's on FS1, the Baseball Tonight. There you go.
Are you talking to yourself? Or?
No, I'm helping okay. people.
I don't think people... I'm glad you got it figured out. No, I didn't mean that. No.
I think it's on so many different outlets. I watched yesterday.
That's not, I know.
But I want to say this. Okay. Let me get it out. I watched the game yesterday on both True TV and TBS.
Oh, was my gosh. TBS?
It was on two different outlets, and I would switch between them just out of like a kind of a personal chuckle.
Does your remote, is it a voice remote?
I wouldn't know, buddy. I've never talked to it.
I think you should make a friend.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you. I know that's what you do. You like to talk to the remotes. You do it here in the studio.
I know.
We do not have voice remotes, but David just sits there talking to the remote.
We do have voice remotes. I could do that right now.
Making a joke.
I could do it right now. I'm going to do it at the break.
I'm like, are you on your phone?
And you're
no. Like, no, it's the remote.
It's the remote. I'm talking to my friend.
Maybe she didn't mean it that way. You got to. I'm talking to my friend. He's talking the remote.
It works.
Down.
Baseball's outstanding again.
Yeah, it was. Yesterday was so much fun.
This is the first time in Major League history, I believe, I heard them say that all four playoff series are tied 1-1.
It's awesome.
It's awesome.
It is. It's really
Tigers
fun.
And Royals have no business being alive this late in October and this deep in the playoffs. They have no business doing that. They really don't. And here they are. Then the Guardians still there, and then the Yankees. They you figure they're going to be there every year.
Well, I thought, you know, I really enjoyed the Tigers, and I thought when Skubal came out, I thought, oh no, if they don't win when he's pitching, this is a disaster for them. Like they are not going to be able. They have to win any of his starts. That's it. It is almost a moral kind of point. You've just got to be able to do that. And when he came out and without allowing any runs, but then I was worried that that was going to turn. And I was really pleased to see Detroit win that game. I thought it was great.
The Tigers are one of those teams where you have to watch the postseason, and it would be helpful to have a roster handy.
Yes.
Because it's like, who is he again?
A lot of unknowns.
Where did he come from? Oh, he's making the major league minimum. Their 26-man payroll for the playoffs is $18.8 million.
Incredible.
All of their lineup, it's full of guys who are not household names. And so Skubal is the one guy who is pretty accomplished, about to win a Cy Young Award for the first time. And so they are a team that has, I don't want to say, it's disrespectful. I don't mean to be that, to say they have no business being here, but it's certainly quite a surprise that they're still alive.
And Cary Carpenter hits, what was that, 425-foot home run, and it's the first, I guess the statistic is Class A had allowed 3 earned runs all season. And he allows a 3-run homer in the 9th inning. It is the first left-handed homer he threw all year. It's incredible.
It is incredible.
Incredible.
This is not a good postseason for established closers. We saw it happen to Devin Williams last week.
That's what went through my
mind. With the Brewers and the Mets. And now Class A has the issue last night. Now it's down to best of three. Best of three in all of the series, which is fun. The Padres and the Dodgers get back in action. That's a heated rivalry with bad blood now on both sides. And it's fun. October baseball is the best. And so we're welcoming hockey season tonight. We got the playoffs going on. NFL Week 6 already upon us. The Bears are in London. The Bulls are beginning their preseason. My goodness.
Yeah.
It's jam-packed.
And we have Stephen Downers Grove texting in. He wants to know if the pregame will begin at 5:30 a.m. because the game begins at 8:30.
Is that what we're doing there?
That is not what's going to happen.
Oh.
I believe we have the marathon on Sunday morning. So you can tune in on Saturday between 9 and 11. The pregame will be a day earlier, and you can listen to it on the Odyssey app. So You can get it, and you can save it, and you will have it forever.
9 to 11 Saturday morning.
9 to 11 on Saturday, we'll have the pregame. Then we will have the postgame immediately following the football game.
So this is one of those Saturday mornings that you really tick off Bruce.
Yeah, well, we're taking
taking the inside the clubhouse slot. Yeah, you're filling in for Bruce.
I'm pretty sure Bruce is off. I think that Yom
I'm
Kippur?
Kidding.
I
yeah.
think that Bruce has the day off, so we will be working in his stead.
From inside the clubhouse to inside the huddle.
We will be doing the pregame show.
Excellent.
So that will be on Saturday morning for the baseball crowd. What?
They'll be there. It'll be fun. Loyal it'll audience.
Be
yeah.
It'll be fun.
And no, then no you doubt can about it.
Listen to it whenever you choose at your leisure. And then, as I say, a normal postgame show.
I'll be curious if by Saturday, we definitely will have clarity, but I wonder what you'll be talking about in regard to Jaquan Brisker. That was big news on Monday.
Yeah, I need more information on that.
Yeah, well, he didn't make the trip.
I know he
That's
didn't make the
enough.
Trip, but I just wonder. So you go into concussion protocol, and then you are. It is determined later in the week if you can play or not,
yes.
Right?
He has to pass a couple, baseline tests.
But conceivably, could he fly over?
Yes.
And play in the game without being there for all the prep?
I believe that he conceivably could do that.
Yes.
And that's definitely part of the range of possibilities. He could. It's not unlike any other week in terms of preparation. Now, it would be obviously different for him. But he's a veteran now that in his role, he wouldn't necessarily need the practice time with his teammates. He can stay active here if he can, if whatever concussion protocol involves. I don't know because we don't know. It was a surprising story to see that he, a day later, showed symptoms. That's always scary when
that happens. We talked a lot about that hit in the moment, and we talked about the two of them, him and Tremble, the tight end, looked like they had really taken – it looked like a – Tremble kind of lowered his head, and Brisker was coming in. It did look like helmet-to-helmet contact.
It was a scary collision.
It was
because the way that Tremble lowered his head, and I don't want to say initiated because that means it sounds like he's looking for something, but he did lower his head and made helmet-to-helmet contact, and then you could tell the impact on both men. Tremble's 6'4", 255 pounds, yes. I believe. Big man. And Jaquan Brisker comes at you with a lot of force and he's fierce and he's got a lot of velocity when he's attacking you, and so it was one of those NFL collisions.
And
you just
I hope he's
look away.
Okay. And if he needs a game off, I totally understand all that. And maybe the wise move is to give him the day off because then you got the bye week and you're not playing for 3 weeks. I understand all of that, but oftentimes guys can clear concussion protocol later in the week and play because of the 7-hour time frame. But there are plenty of ways to getting people. There are plenty of flights to London.
Oh, that's not an issue. You're right.
Yeah,
but I think when you talk about his concussion history, you can't discount that from the equation either.
And I'm not looking at it lightly. I'm just saying when someone can't make the trip on Monday for a Sunday game, conceivably they could make that trip on Friday. I don't know. When would you have to get there?
Well, I think you'd want to leave as Thursday night at the latest. I don't know that Friday, you're flying overnight.
I don't know why you want him to go with Jacksonville. That's weird to me.
He could fly in the back. He could fly in coach, everyone else in first class.
Does he have to go on their flight?
No.
That's so weird. anyway, we'll see, and we'll have more information as the week unfolds. But yes, at this point, he did not make the flight, and he's not. Tevin Jenkins is on the flight. Did make it?
Yes, he did go.
Weird.
They want to monitor. They can probably rehab him there.
Yep. Okay.
You wonder who the backup with Jaquan Brisker out. Does that mean Jonathan Owen steps in?
He could play. They got a couple of options.
Those safety positions can be interchangeable depending on how you play, but they've got some depth there. They have some different possibilities they could use.
All right, we're going to get into all of it. We'll talk about all the stories of the week, and we'll do so in the Pick 6 next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw
where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How do you feel this morning regarding Caleb Williams' growth? Are you encouraged that he entered Sunday with just three passes of 20-plus yards, connected with DJ Moore on TDs of 42 and 34 yards, and completed a 25-yarder to Cole Kmet? Was it a breakthrough? Will he add more downfield throws to this total in London?
Yeah, I hope so. I sure do hope so. You got to be careful how you think about breakthroughs. I think it's just growth. I think that he did some things in that game that he struggled to do earlier in the season. I think if you look at him on a game-to-game basis, he kind of does little things better all the time. He seems to be, you know, and we talked about this. After week four, we were talking about the idea that he's better now than he was when he started the season, and he'll probably be better in another four games. I don't know that progress for quarterbacks is as incremental as it has been for him, where you look at his passer rating and it's almost like he's climbing a ladder. It's usually more like you're going from a floor to a floor, not necessarily doing a progress all the way up. It's almost like you're on one level, and then you work and you work and you get better, and then you're on a different level, and that's kind of the way it usually works in the NFL. But in his case, I think we've seen steady growth, and I think they've stumbled upon a formula for success, and I use the word stumbled upon. I mean, they've tried different ways of getting it done, and it wasn't working, and now it seems to be working. Part of that is the opponent. I understand that. You know, it's more difficult against the best defenses than it is against kind of modest defenses that are in the midst of five bad pass defenses. So that should increase and help what they want to get done. But I like what they're doing with the balance in the offense. I like that they've been adding a different element every week. And, yeah, I really hope it continues in London.
In the words of Al Davis, just win, baby. Okay, they keep winning, and it doesn't matter what his stats are as long as he's continuing to protect the football. That's the most important thing. Mully, each week he's gotten better. He's gotten, now again, the bar was set pretty low. It wasn't a great start, but each week he's gotten better. I'm always a big, you know, every time you take a rep, you get a little bit better, you're going to have success no matter what you do in life. One thing I think, and I'm sure it'll be a storyline, and if not, okay, let's create the storyline. You've got the first pick in the 2021 NFL draft, right? And Caleb Williams, if anything, we know about him for sure. Super competitive, really competitive guy. I think he competes in everything that he does. And I think he is going to be zeroed in on the fact that, like, this number one pick is better than that number one pick. And hopefully that does not get in the way, where he doesn't get a little too over his skis and a little too risky with the ball. But I think that's what's going to motivate him this week. And I'm looking forward to that storyline playing out.
Who would you rather have?
I would rather have Caleb Williams. Yeah. I think he loves the game more than Trevor Lawrence does. We've heard that a little bit, that Trevor really is kind of like, eh.
Interesting topic, and I think you're right about the comparison. People will do that inevitably. And I think Caleb Williams may look at that as, you know, just this week's opportunity to find an edge or something to be a motivating factor. This whole season, I think, is probably under the umbrella of a breakthrough or breakout. I don't know that's any one singular week. You hope that one is connected to the other. And I think the last 2 weeks, what's been encouraging is that they seem to be connected. You seem to be headed in the right direction. And the kinds of things that you saw him do against the Rams, he did against the Panthers on Sunday. It was 1 week to the next, and next week now he gets a little bit better, or at least continues the progress. You don't want to see him take a half step or a step backward. And obviously the Bears coaching staff can help him do that. They already have. The last 2 weeks have been more professional game plans, more NFL game plans that you think fit the Bears' identity. They have been maybe a little bit run heavy for some people's taste, but when you see what happened against the Rams and the Panthers, Shane Waldron called more runs and passes. Or maybe that's the way things turned out because of the check system. But that's what you do with when you have a rookie quarterback. Look at the Washington Commanders. Similar, a different style offensively, but similar in terms of ratio. Don't ask your rookie quarterback to save you each and every week. Don't ask him to throw 52 passes against a team that you should beat. Whoever had the meeting after the Colts game, whatever was said and whatever was done, that, I think, helped turn this Bears offense around, at least initially. Now, they still have to back it up in London. But, yes, Caleb Williams has shown progress. We should be encouraged because this is the direction he should be headed. The downfield passing game was a missing element. They found that against the Panthers. They need to continue to attack that in London against the Jaguars.
And now I have to be a question I'm going to have to ask my mom.
The Bears announced that Jaquan Brisker will not travel with the team to London initially because he entered concussion protocol on Monday when he got to Hallis Hall, a day after a massive collision in Sunday's game. How bad is this news?
Don't want to be an alarmist because it's the NFL. Tommy Tremble and Jaquan Brisker had an NFL big-time collision on Sunday. It was a car crash, and Tommy Tremble lowered his helmet, and Jaquan Brisker felt the brunt of that. 6'4", 250 pounds. And that was collided with Jaquan Brisker, who is a tough guy, but he's not 6'4", 250. He is a player with, unfortunately, a concussion history. When he wakes up on Monday morning and he shows symptoms of a concussion, that's not good for Jaquan Brisker and not good for the Bears. Unfortunately, in 2022, he missed games against the Jets and the Packers with a concussion and concussion protocol. Last year, he missed the Chargers and the Saints games because he was in concussion protocol. And this year, again, he is in concussion protocol. That's a history that should be concerning to everyone. So you can't take this lightly. You can't just assume he's going to get on a jet and fly to London and be ready to go on Sunday. Flying for somebody in concussion protocol, coming back from a concussion, isn't the greatest thing in the world. So this is not good news. There's no way to spin it. It's unfortunate. It's a reality of the NFL. But you hope that Jaquan Brisker recovers from this and does what's right for him and his future. But this was disappointing to hear last night.
Disappointing to hear. I was surprised by it because he played the rest of the game. I'm not saying he played every single snap. I didn't go through the tape. Maybe we need to go through the tape, see if he did come off for any significant time and come back in. Easy to see his snap count. And then if you follow the Bears on social media, you know, the club dub is back and we can all roll our eyes about that. But he is in those videos having a good time. He's celebrating and he should. That was a big win. He was a big part of the defense doing their job. So I'm sure he woke up with a headache on Monday, right? A lot of people woke up with a headache on Monday for whatever reason. And because of his history, what? Molly's laughing at me.
For whatever reason. Oh, yeah, you're equating it with booze up? Is that what
saying lots of people enjoyed themselves on Sunday, okay? I saw it firsthand. Anyway, you know, I think because of his background, though, is part of the reason that he might be in the protocol because he's had these. And again, the part of the verbiage is initially. So let's wait.
Right.
He didn't travel with the team initially. If he's not there, that's a big loss.
Yeah, the three of them didn't travel, right? Terrell Smith, the corner, who's got an injury. Zach Pickens, who's been out. And this is obviously a different and kind of more serious thing that's popped up here, the concussion. You've got to be careful to say that it doesn't mean he's not going to play it. It doesn't mean he's going to not eventually get to London, but he was not allowed with the team to depart on Monday, and that's a big deal. That's a big deal in the NFL. So, you know, you just kind of wait and see what happens, and kind of hold your breath a little bit, and see if he recovers in time to be able to play, and if they determine that that's the best thing to do, or if they are looking at it as a, you know, chance to get him a couple weeks off if he doesn't go, right? So maybe they look at it that way. I don't know. I think that, you know, we'll wait and see. But it was scary when it happened. It was a big hit, and it caused a fumble, and it was a, you know, good thing for the Bears at the time, but it doesn't look very good this morning.
That's a good question.
That's the voice of Coach Dave Wannstedt. He will be here at 7:40 in studio for two big segments. Are you encouraged to learn that Tevin Jenkins, who departed Sunday's game with an ankle injury while recovering from a rib injury that barely allowed him to play, will at least travel to London with his teammates? He's there. He crossed the pond. Are you holding your breath regarding his ability to play? Are you good with the reserve Bill Murray, who played well in Jenkins' place?
I thought Bill Murray, you know, went on review of the tape was great, and I thought that there was a play where he just went nuts, where he knocked a guy down, then he ran over and knocked another guy down, they went over and tried to get a third guy down. It was pretty impressive. He really wanted to play. You could see the guy was anxious to play, and he really made an impact. So, and they loved him at PFF. I saw they graded him pretty highly, so that's good. You know, I hope Tevin Jenkins is okay. It's just tough. I mean, you get a rib injury. He went through a difficult process to make sure that he could get back on the field and play, and then he goes down with a new injury, right, with an ankle injury. And now I'm sure he's getting all sorts of treatment and doing whatever he can. It's just he's hurt all the time, man. I mean, he's just – I love that he is as dedicated as he is, and I love that he made the trip, and here's hoping that he can play. But I think we're okay. I think the Bears would be sufficiently okay with Bill Murray.
I'm not so sure about
coming in. Then,
but if Bill Murray, okay,
he had a good game.
Yeah, he graded. You know, again, if you're into those grades, he graded out really well. I was shocked to see that. You know, again, you'd have to go back and really look into it. But I mean, if he's your best option, if Jenkins is on the plane, I think Jenkins is going to get himself, you know, up and running. He'll start. He will start the game. Now the question is, can he get through the game?
Yeah, I don't think Tevin Jenkins made the trip for the fish and chips. So he's got to be a number one option because there's a drop-off, even though Bill Murray may have played well against a bad defensive line. The Jaguars aren't the Panthers. They're probably not much better, but they are a little better. I hope Tevin Jenkins does not become a chronic week-to-week problem like he has begun this season. He needs to be on the field if he wants to have any kind of hope to staying in Chicago. He's got to stay on the field. Before last week, it was his ribs, which probably still hurt, by the way.
Yeah.
And this week, it's his ankle. What will it be next week? You don't know, but you sense that it will be something because it's always something with Tevin Jenkins. When he's on the field, he is an above average offensive lineman. But he's got to stay on the field before you can think of him that way and expect that kind of consistency. So Bill Murray is the best of their available options, which says more about, to me, Nate Davis than it does Bill Murray. They have given up on Nate Davis. If he's healthy and he's unable to be counted on, I don't know what is next. Maybe they should try to find a trade partner that would take him off their hands, because why is he still here if he's not able to contribute? It seems inconceivable that Bill Murray, at this stage of his career, is a better option than Nate Davis on the field, but there's a lot more that goes into these decisions. But back to Tevin Jenkins, let's hope that he had made the trip for a reason. I sense that he did.
You know, to answer your question,
that's the voice of Billy Donovan. The Bulls have their preseason opener in Cleveland tonight. And according to our guy Casey Johnson, Coach Billy D hasn't ruled out Lonzo Ball or Josh Giddey, but won't commit to playing them either. Both guys are continuing to take contact in practice and scrimmage, with Ball, quote, still facing a ramp-up period, and Giddey closer to returning. What do you think you're going to see out of those two tonight?
Well, I wonder if we're going to see either tonight. If we do, it'll be a minutes limit on Lonzo Ball. I wouldn't mess around with Giddey necessarily. Lonzo Ball has certainly had a longer ramp-up period, if you will, to get to this point. We waited 2.5 years. It'll be 3 years in January that he has been since he's been on the court in a Bulls uniform. Josh Giddey, that was a surprise injury. Let's hope they take their time. They've got 2 weeks until the opener. That was the date circled on most Bulls fans' calendar for Josh Giddey. Let's take our time and get there. Lonzo Ball, curiosity more than anything, and respect for what he has endured to get to this point. He steps onto the floor, and the minute he does, he's a medical marvel. People are taking notes, and somewhere people are planning in-depth papers on the process, because Lonzo Ball playing NBA basketball, even in a preseason game, would be something. And so if he plays 10 to 12 minutes, it's to get him back acclimated and used to it. I hope he plays 10 to 12 minutes.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. I'd like to hear what Chuck Swirsky's got to say tonight on The Score. 5:45, the coverage begins about Lonzo. I would not play Giddey tonight. Doesn't seem like there's any upside in doing that. But Lonzo's got to prove that he can make contact, play against another team, and be effective.
But Chuck will be Giddey.
Oh, Chuck will be Giddey.
By all accounts, it is Giddey that is closer to being able to play than Lonzo Ball. They still have some stuff with Lonzo that they are concerned with. And, yeah, I think Giddey might get a run. Not a long one, but he might be out there. They're both apparently practicing and scrimmaging. And it's Giddey that is closer to playing. So maybe that's the case. We'll see. I'm sorry. I know I should be more enthusiastic with Lonzo, but I'm more skeptical with Lonzo than Giddey. Just for the reasons you mentioned, we haven't seen him in so long. And when we did, it was just for a short period of time. I don't know. It feels like he needs more time, and he's not going to be nearly as ready. I mean, Giddey was playing in the Olympics, and that's how he got hurt. So I hope he's okay. But I think Giddey closer to being back than Lonzo at this point.
Wow, that's a good question.
Voice of John Heyman, he's here at 9:25. What did you make of Cary Carpenter hitting a 425-foot three-run home run in the ninth inning to lead the Tigers to a 3-0 victory over the Guardians? How about that being the first lefty home run allowed by the All-Star, Emmanuel Clase, who has allowed just 3 earned runs for the Guardians during the entire regular season? How did that happen, since it was the first lefty home run allowed by Class A since the 4th of July back in 2023, a gap of 461 days?
That is unbelievable. And, I mean, the guy got all of it. He beat the heck out of that ball. It was an incredible moment in that game. I don't know how it happened, and I was sitting there watching it. It was unbelievable. I did not expect Detroit to really be making much noise in the playoffs. And, they lost the first game. And now here you are. You're in a 7-game series. It's moving to Detroit. And Detroit suddenly has stolen home field, right? I mean, it's like a home, whatever. Incredible. It's an incredible thing to see him win a game there. I don't know if it holds up. I don't know if they can win in Detroit, but it's pretty spectacular that they managed to do that. I did think of Devin Williams. It did go through my head. The exact same thing kind of happened, that, you know, you've got the advantage here. Now, they had a couple guys on base, and it's first and third, and you're looking at it like, wow, this, you know, what was it, a 2-2 slider? Is that what he threw? It was just such a huge moment, and kudos to him. What a great, great signature moment in the postseason.
Well, watching the replay over and over and over again, I also did catch it live. It looked like the ball was right down the middle of the plate. Mm-hmm. I mean, so he didn't fool anybody, that's for sure. And I think that StatCast was like, it was 110 miles an hour off the bat of Carpenter. So, you know, fastball comes, hits the bat fast, and bat ball went far. You know, good for the Tigers.
Hardest hit ball in his career.
It's a good story, right? The Tigers are a great story, so keep doing it.
It's a great story, but nobody could tell you the names of that story. We should give away some sort of prize if we have a caller that could tell us 5 Detroit Tigers. Because as much as you watch them, they are relatively anonymous, definitely cheap, but doesn't matter because they're even up with the Yankees 1-1. In the ALDS, and that was a great moment, a great postseason moment. This is not the playoffs for closers. this is not a good playoff for the closer crowd, because Devin Williams last week, Emmanuel Clase this week, who's next? So the Tigers don't care about your payroll. They don't care about the Yankee mystique. They don't care anything else. The Guardians being how many games in front of them. They, you can't count them out of anything. Can they play in the World Series? Could they be could they win the pennant? I don't know that anybody's going to beat the Tigers now. They feel like they're going to. You get that sense when they do stuff like this. So, yeah, Cary Carpenter, whoever he is, he's one of many young Detroit Tigers who are just having a time of their lives and being managed well by A.J. Hinch. And this is emerging as the best story of the postseason.
That was a thick pick.
Thick pick. All right. If you had to take the Yankees or the other three AL Central teams to win the pennant, who would you bet $100 of Mully's money on, and why?
Well, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of Mully's money he's putting out there.
Mully doesn't have that kind
of dough. All right. So I would still take the Yankees. I still think the Yankees, even though the Tigers are the story of the day, the Royals, Bobby Witt Jr., goodness sakes, you see that double play?
Yep.
What a glove. What a bat. What a player. Guardians still, you can't count them out because they are always a team you can't count out. But I think the Yankees will eventually prevail. This is the AL Central and the Yankees. That's all that's left. And I still think the Yankees are going to come out of this. So I would bet whatever Mully wants to put up there, but I don't think it would be $100. How about coffee?
I would love a cup. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to go get that in just a couple of minutes, guys. Try to keep it going without the caffeine until then. If I got $100 of Mully's money, I would go to Circus Sports Illinois. And I, after the way we've been talking about the last question, I would invest it in the Tigers. I think that is a possibility. I think they're going to beat the Guardians now. That had to be absolutely deflating. I think they won the series by getting to that closer. That's definitely like a mind game going on right now.
I love these conversations because sometimes, so you believe in momentum.
I wish they were playing again today. I'm sure the Tigers do too.
I worry the Yankees don't have the pitching to get this done. That is the bottom line. I don't know who among the AL Central is the best team. Probably the Guardians. And I don't know that they're going to be there. But I would honestly say that I don't think the Yankees have the kind of pitching that is just a lock for them to be able to kind of plow through everything. And, you know, it was weird to see Rodon as mediocre as he was and to give up. What did they score all the runs in one inning, I believe, right? And I don't know. I mean, good for Kansas City. I don't know that they can win that series, but they're in it. I think it's fairly obvious that they're in it. So I know why everyone loves the Yankees. It has nothing to do with their pitching. It has to do with the big boppers.
It's the big boppers.
And that's great.
Back to back.
Yeah.
You know.
That's it.
Then maybe they get Rizzo back in the next round because he's missed. But they you're right to question the pitching.
So I'm just saying I'm not saying it's a lock that this doesn't work. But yeah, I mean it's interesting that they don't have the pitching that you would definitely have. And as far as me getting $100 of Mully's money, that is I would have to fill out forms and submit them to my CEO CFO. And hope that
sounds like a lot of red tape.
There is a lot of red tape.
Yeah. All right, we'll just settle for coffee then.
Okay.
Forget about the $100.
I'll happily buy you a cup of coffee.
All right.
Tuesday,
that's good.
On Tuesday, which I will repay you.
Today's Tuesday.
Yeah. No, not this Tuesday. all right. That is the that's the pick six. We've got the extra point, and it's really a good one. We're going to make some picks. We're going to pick it up and we're going to tear it down and we're going to tell you exactly what's going to happen. We've seen a lot of rehearsal and we feel like we know what all the storylines are. And we'll share that with you next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
All right, prediction time. What is your prediction for Connor Bedard goals this year? How about the Blackhawks' victories? And if you had a guess, what teams will be the winners of the East and the West, and who will be playing for the Stanley Cup? And obviously, more predictions. Who wins it all?
Exciting. Hockey starts tonight. Blackhawks back in action. They open the season in Utah. Connor Bedard, season two. They did a lot in the offseason to surround him with veteran talent and experience. They did a lot to make sure that when he gets picked on, there will be retaliation. We saw a little bit of that the other night. It was great to see Connor Bedard be a little feisty himself. But this is the star of this team. Everything revolves around him. They got Toivo. They got Bertuzzi. They got a lot of guys to surround him with talent that is proven in the NHL. Still going to be an uphill climb. Still a long way to go. This isn't the Blackhawk era that you could begin a season and wonder if they can stay fresh and healthy for a long playoff run. This is going to be a team that is on the outside looking in, is competitive and respectable on most nights, but probably not a playoff team, not yet. I'd like to say that right now. You get over a little bit carried away, get a little overwhelmed with enthusiasm on opening night, but I don't think this is a playoff team. The numbers, Connor Bedard goals. I'll go 40. I think he's capable of scoring 40 goals. Between 35 and 40 might be realistic. I'll go 40, though, because I want to put the expectations high for somebody who I've referred to as the biggest star in this city. The Blackhawks, I say 33 victories, probably right around 75 points. That's not good enough to get into the postseason. They'll be on the outside looking in. And the winner of the Western Conference will be the Oilers. The winner of the Eastern Conference will be the Maple Leafs. And the Oilers.
Holy cow. You're going all.
I'm all Canada. Oh, Canada. Oh, Canada. They're going to be hoisting the Silver Chalice in Edmonton next June.
All right. According to BetCirca Illinois, the Blackhawks have the fifth shortest odds to have the fewest regular season points. So that means the prediction is they'll be the fifth worst team in all of the NHL. Last year, the Blackhawks won 23 games. I think they'll win 30 this year. Last year, Bedard scored 22 goals. I think he scores 30 this year. And I think the Bruins will play the Oilers, and I think the Bruins will win the Cup.
Ooh, Boston.
Yeah, the Hawks had 52 points in 82 games while winning 23 last year. It's pretty ugly. I don't know. I think they could get better without getting good enough. You know what I mean? Like, I think they will improve, but I don't know that their numbers are jumping significantly. So I think that, 30 games seems like enough to believe they can win. And I think that sounds like a good over-under. Bedard, I think 33 goals for the year seems about right to me. I hope he's healthy and I hope he plays well. And I picked Edmonton as well. And the problem is, I don't want to pick Florida again. I guess for the Eastern Conference, I'm choosing between the Rangers and the Devils, and I don't like either team, but I'll go with the Rangers just because of the power
Rangers?
Of New York. Yeah, I'll go Edmonton over the Rangers. I think Edmonton lost game 7 2-1 to Florida, so I'll go Edmonton winning game 7 2-1 over the Rangers.
Oh, wow, you got the score. That's impressive. Yeah. Brandon, you bet a lot of hockey. Have you made your hockey predictions?
You stole mine, David. I have the Maple Leafs. And I have the Oilers. I have the Blackhawks winning 32 games this season.
Nice, nice.
And I have Connor Bedard scoring 30 goals.
30 goals would be realistic. That's a realistic goal. I think definitely when you look at Connor McDavid, his second year, he scored 30 goals. But he only scored 16 his rookie season because of an injury. He only played 45 games. That's the comp that a lot of people make. I understand going from 22 to 40 is a huge leap, but
I went for 33 because it is Christ's age. Dare I say anything else?
You want me to top that?
No, I'm just telling
Amen.
You. I feel like the chosen one. There is a religious atmosphere.
I think 40 is a high bar. It's a very high bar. And if he's 40, he's going to be having a phenomenal season. Realistically, I think that 30 to 35 is where he should land 30, and figure. 30, figure
30 to
okay.
35.
Whatever. Yes, 33. Okay, 33. He could definitely get to 33.
Go and be a fisher of men.
I hope that he is as aggressive as he has been. I think he looks for his shot, and the talent around him has got to help. And I hope he's not a guy that's going to defer to a lot of these veterans and just shoots the puck with as much aggressiveness and confidence as we saw as a rookie. So obviously, I'm putting 40 out there just because
it's fun
to consider.
Can you explain for our listeners, since tonight they open, mm-hmm. why he is on a line with Teravainen but not Bertuzzi? Weren't we told that the three guys would be together?
Well, they're going to mix and match.
But he's not playing. He doesn't have a good rapport with Bertuzzi at this point, or am I misreading that?
According to the information that we've been privy to, according to the small sample size of watching on the Chicago Sports Network, yes, that's probably an accurate depiction. But I don't know that before the opener you want to get too carried away with falling in love with too many conclusions, because I think they're still forming them. I think the one thing about getting all these veterans in there is that everyone's got a specific style of play, just figuring out each guy's strengths and weaknesses. Bertuzzi, Teravainen, and Bedard, that was supposed to be the top line.
Yeah.
If that isn't, then it might be just something subtle. It doesn't necessarily mean anybody's a disappointment. It's just different things in terms of chemistry, where they position themselves. I don't know why so far, but I wouldn't be too quick to dismiss that possibility. The one thing that is interesting is that, you know, Kurashev is a player that took a step last year playing with Bedard. How does he fit in? And if Bedard gets off to a slow start or vice versa, you wonder if they will try to pair those two together. I am excited to see how Tavo and Bedard play together, just because of how creative and how similar those skills are.
Well, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, that's the thing. The Blackhawks don't really have like a 40 goal type of another player outside of Bedard. So that's why I have Bedard's goals at like kind of lower from 40 to like 30, because I just feel like everybody's just going to hone in on.
Yes.
Like everyone is going to. I mean, he's going to face the best defenseman and the best grouping every game. I mean, there's no shadow of a doubt that they're going to. Any team that plays the Blackhawks are going to be well aware of him and you know, try everything to prevent him from scoring on them. I wonder, David, Taylor Hall coming back, he was once an MVP in the NHL, and now he's an older player, but he was hurt all of last year. What do we expect from him?
Hockey guys can recover from injuries, it seems like, better than a lot of other sports and athletes. Taylor Hall can relate to Connor Bedard in a way nobody else can. First overall pick, any former MVP. Yes, definitely a guy whose value and return is welcome, because will he fit with Bedard on the top line? It's a nice problem for Luke Richardson to have. He has a lot more options and a lot more talent to discuss and consider than he did a year ago. So Taylor Hall is a guy I think is ready to contribute. It looks like he's been pretty good in preseason. Just don't know how or where.
I was also talking to a friend of mine. I'd love to get your take on this one. He said that Korchinski, they had to have him in the NHL last year. He probably belonged at Rockford. I thought he was pretty good. But he said that there is some NHL rule that when a guy leaves juniors,
accurate,
is accurate.
Yes.
So the minute they could, they moved him down because they want him to get more seasoning.
Well, I think that's the explanation. I think they were maybe hopeful that he would have taken a step.
Okay.
He was a little inconsistent last year as a rookie teenage defenseman. They have gotten some veterans again in free agency. You wonder how healthy they'll stay, but they give them a little bit more predictability on the blue line. That, to me, is the biggest problem for the Blackhawks going into this season. How will their defense hold up in front of Peter Mrazek, who was very good last year? But I do think Korchinski going to Rockford suggests that, you know what, they don't have to play guys like that before they're ready any longer. they're ready to have some veterans instead.
So that, will there be a constant movement of these guys? Do you expect, you know, Frankie Nazar is down in Rockford? I mean, will the guys be constantly moving up?
I don't think so. I think by design, you acquired and signed veteran depth so they would stay here and be running three and four lines, and you wouldn't have to bring up guys from Rockford all the time, like a shuttle back and forth.
Right.
You're not, that was last season. And ideally for the Hawks, they're ready to compete more this season.
Yeah. And we have a texter asking about Oliver Moore. No, he's not on the team.
No.
None of the young guys really.
And Artie's still hurt.
Made it.
I think Artie is still hurt, the second overall pick from Michigan State.
He caught one on his foot in first practice, right? Before the first practice. So that's not
bad luck.
All right. That's our season preview of the NHL. Wow. We're going to get back to your calls, 312-644-6767. You got NHL questions? Let's talk that. I'm pumped up for it now since the season is opening, and we got to get to Montreal, not necessarily for hockey, but we just got to go to Montreal. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 score.
It'll be fun. They're obviously first taste of it, and their team's going to be flying, and it's going to be a lot of energy in the building, so it's going to be fun for both sides.
But hey, as they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. Connor Bedard talking about the start of the new NHL season and the new NHL franchise in Utah, the Utah Hockey Club, which is where the Blackhawks open tonight. And that, of course, Chance the Rapper, being a sports reporter forced to cover hockey. Very funny, the SNL skit. I'm just curious, David. So the Blackhawks, by all accounts, have gone out and improved their team fairly significantly. They've jumped into the waters, and they are trying to put together a team that will be more competitive than they were a year ago. And that's all fine and well. I just wonder, why aren't more of the young Blackhawks, of the, kind of the guys that we've been watching them acquire in the draft over the last few years, why aren't there more of those young Hawks in the NHL? I understand Rockford's fairly loaded. I understand that they have a lot of good young hockey players in their system and whose rights they control. But I thought part of the plan was to be graduating guys into the NHL so that they can then prepare so that the whole group is good at once together. And it seems like this is a minor difference to what they were planning at one point anyway.
I think it's an excellent question. And it's also a good point of comparison as we look at every team in town and we always evaluate the developmental process. You look at the Bears and you look at the Sox and you look at the Cubs. Every team has been through this developmental process and you tear it down and you start over. Unfortunately, we have a lot of experience in Chicago in observing these things. I think Kyle Davidson is doing this right because he's not putting the emphasis on getting these young prospects who have enormous talent and great potential up to the NHL sooner than necessary. So what they did in the offseason, to me, the way I interpreted it, they go out and they get a guy like Bertuzzi, they get Mikheyev, they get veterans like Martinez.
Tavo,
I think, is one of these guys that is going to be here for a while and still at a point of his career where he's maybe even the edge of his prime or entering his prime or still in it. But I think that what you do is you buy yourself time for these prospects to develop. There's nothing about the prospects that has changed. They're still as high on Korchinski. They're still as high on Nazar. They're still as high on Landon Slager. All these guys that are Oliver Moore. That's a long list.
But the guys that played in the NHL a year ago, that are no longer in the NHL. I just wonder what, you know, is that a good thing, a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing.
Doesn't it feel like a setback for them?
I don't think it's a setback, Molly. I think it's a good thing for the organization, because if you want to those guys to play at the NHL level, you're going to struggle. You're not going to be competitive. You're not going to be as respectable. They're not ready yet. They got a cup of coffee because they were talented. You wanted to expose them to the experience and get that kind of atmosphere so they know what it feels like. But I don't think they're ready for an entire season. So what they did was they went out and they acquired players who have been through entire seasons, in some cases, many seasons. So the Hawks are trying to be respectable and competitive. They're going to let their prospects develop and just wait. Because just wait, they have a lot of potential because they have had a lot of good drafts.
Oh, I know. I think what's interesting from just a novice perspective, if you will, and I just find it interesting that there are guys in their career that are now being forced to take a step back when they thought they were moving forward. And I mean, like, that's great if they all still develop and come up and are the entity you thought they were, and their confidence isn't impacted by moving from the NHL to Rockford, wherever. I just think that the problem that I have with it is that as I look, and I check a lot of different places to see what the national/international, I like to go to TSN and check some of the Canadian sites. Nobody has them really improving that much. They are still listed in the 20s, like the mid to low 20s, as to where they will finish in the NHL. It's not like they're better despite bringing in these players. I'm just saying.
I don't disagree.
From the perspective of national prognosticators.
But I think they are going to play a more responsible brand of hockey. Okay. And they also will have veterans who, we talk about development, and you're right to point out guys like Nazer and Korchinski and Slager and all the guys who had, you know, cameos last year, Korchinski more than that. But you also can't forget about what's important to Connor Bedard. It starts and everything is about him. So you can't have his progress stalled or stunted because he's not surrounded by guys who know how to play or are ready for the NHL. So the more young guys that you would have surrounded him with, the more burden you put on his shoulders. And now with veterans, at least, guys like Taylor Hall, guys like, you know, Craig Smith, Ryan Donato, guys who are role players that are going to take on greater significance because you have to let Bedard be surrounded by guys who know how to play at the NHL level. Okay. And that experience matters to his development as much as anything.
All right, 312-644-6767. We'll be back with your calls. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.